love that class.
Heather Lockerbie fluffed her short cap of blonde hair.
Winnie, I can pick you up on the way if you want.
Give me a call first. I'd love to try it.
And now?
Heather rubbed her hands together.
Was that who I thought it was?
Sorry?
Abra responded.
The man who came in during class. Wasn't that Eli Landon?
The name brought on an immediate murmur. Abra felt the benefits of her hour's yoga practice dissolve as her shoulders tightened.
Yes, that was Eli.
I told you!
Heather elbowed Winnie.
I told you I'd heard he was moving into Bluff House. Are you seriously doing the cleaning there while he's in the house?
There's not a lot to clean if nobody's living there.
But, Abra, aren't you nervous? I mean, he's accused of murder, of killing his own wife, and...
He was cleared, Heather, remember?
Just because they didn't have enough evidence to arrest him doesn't mean he isn't guilty. You shouldn't be alone in that house with him.
Just because the press likes a good scandal, especially where sex, money, and bedrock New England families are involved, doesn't mean he isn't innocent.
Maureen arched fiery red eyebrows.
You know that old rule of law, Heather? Innocent until proven guilty?
I know he got fired, and he was a criminal defense lawyer. Seems fishy, if you ask me, that they'd fire him if he wasn't guilty. And they said he was the prime suspect. Witnesses heard him threaten his wife the same day she was killed. She'd have gotten a pile of money in a divorce, and he had no business being in that house, did he?
It was his house,
Abra pointed out.
But he'd moved out. I'm just saying, where there's smoke...
Where there's smoke sometimes means someone else started the fire.
You're so trusting.
Heather gave Abra a one-armed hug, as sincere as it was patronizing.
I'm just going to worry about you.
I think Abra's a fine feel for people and can take care of herself.
Greta Parrish, the senior of the group at 72, pulled on her warm and practical wool coat.
And Hester Landon wouldn't have opened Bluff House for Eli, always a well-mannered young man, if she had the smallest doubt of his innocence.
Oh, now I've nothing but affection and respect for Miss Landon,
Heather began.
Every one of us hope and pray she'll be well enough to come home soon, but...
No buts!
Greta yanked a cloche cap over her steel-gray hair.
That boy's part of this community. He may have lived in Boston, but he's a Landon, and he's one of us. God knows he's been through the ringer. I'd hate to think anyone here would add to his troubles.
I didn't mean that.
Flustered, Heather looked from face to face.
Honestly, I didn't. I'm just worried about Abra. I can't help it.
I believe you are.
Greta gave Heather a brisk nod.
I believe you've no reason to... This was a very nice practice, Abra.
Thank you. Why don't I drive you home? It's snowing pretty hard.
I believe I can manage a 3-minute walk.
Women bundled up, filed out. Maureen lingered.
Heather's an ass,
Maureen stated.
A lot of people are. And a lot of people will think the way she does. If he was suspected, he must be guilty. It's wrong.
Of course it is.
Maureen O'Malley, her short, spiky hair as fiery as her eyebrows, took another pull from her water bottle.
The problem is, I don't know if I'd think the same, at least in some little cynical pocket, if I didn't know Eli.
I didn't realize you did.
He was my first serious makeout.
Hold that!
Abra pointed with both index fingers.
Just hold that. That's a glass of wine story.
You don't have to twist my arm. Just let me text Mike that I'm going to be about another half hour.
You do that. I'll pour the wine.
In the kitchen, Abra chose a bottle of Shiraz while Maureen plopped down on the sofa in the cozy living area.
He says that's fine. The kids haven't killed each other yet and are currently in the happy throes of snowstorm.
She looked up from her phone, smiled when Abra handed her the wine, took a seat.
Thanks. I'll consider this girding my loins before I walk next door into the battle and feed the troops.
Make out?
I was 15, and while I had been kissed, that was the first kiss, huh?
tongues and hands and heavy breathing. Let me say first, the boy had most excellent lips and very nice hands. The first, I'll also admit, to touch these amazing tatas.
She patted her breasts, then sipped her wine.
But not the last. Details, details. July 4th, after the fireworks, we had a bonfire on the beach, a bunch of us. I had permission, which was hard won, let me tell you, and which my kids will likely have a harder time winning due to my experience. He was so cute. Oh, my God, Eli Landon up from Boston for a month, and I set my sights on him. I was not alone. How cute. That curling hair that would get more sun-streaked every day. Oh, those fabulous crystal blue eyes. And he had a smile that would just knock you senseless. An athletic build, He played basketball, as I remember. If he wasn't at the beach, shirtless, he was at the community center playing ball. Shirtless. Let me repeat.
He's lost weight,
Abra mentioned.
He's too thin.
I saw some pictures and the news clips. Yeah, he's too thin. But then, that summer, he was so beautiful. So young and happy and fun. I flirted my butt off, and that July 4th bonfire paid the dividends.
First time he kissed me, we were sitting around the fire. Music banging out, some of us dancing, some of us in the water. One thing led to another, and we walked down to the pier.
She sighed with the memory.
Ah, just a couple of hormonal teenagers on a warm summer night. It didn't go any farther than it should have, though I'm sure my father would have disagreed. But it was the headiest moment of my life to that date. Seemed so sweet and innocent now, but still ridiculously romantic. Surf and sea and moonlight, music from down the beach, a couple of warm, half-naked bodies just beginning to understand really what they were for. So?
Leaning forward, Abra circled both hands in a hurry-up gesture.
What happened then? We went back to the bonfire. I think it might have gone farther than it should have if he hadn't taken me back to the group. I was so unprepared for what happens inside your body when someone really flips that switch, you know?
Oh, boy, do I.
But he stopped, and after, he walked me home. I saw him a few more times before he went back to Boston, and we had a few more lip locks. But nothing hit me like the first. The next time he came down, we were both dating someone. We never reconnected, not that way. He probably doesn't even remember that July 4th with the redhead under the Whiskey Beach pier. I bet you're selling yourself short. Maybe. If we ran into each other when he'd come up to visit, we'd have a nice little chat, the way you do. Once I ran into him in the market when I was enormously pregnant with Liam. Eli carried my bags out to the car. He's a good man. I believe that.
You met his wife?
No, I saw her once or twice, but never met her. She was gorgeous, I'll give her that. But I wouldn't say she was the type who enjoyed those nice little chats outside the market. Word was there was no love lost between her and Hester Landon. Eli came up alone or with the rest of his family a few times after they were married. Then he just didn't come. At least, not that I know of.
She looked at her watch.
I've got to get home. Feed the rampaging horde.
Maybe you should go by and see him.
I think it might feel like an intrusion at this point, or like I was morbidly curious.
He needs friends, but you may be right. It may be too soon.
Maureen carried her empty wine glass to the kitchen, set it down.
I know you, abracadabra. You won't let him wallow. Not for long.
She pulled on her coat.
It's your nature to fix things, heal things, kiss it where it hurts. Hester knew just what she was doing when she asked you to look after him in the house.
Then I better not let her down.
She gave Maureen a hug before she opened the back door.
Thanks for telling me. Not only a sexy story of teenage lust, but it gives me yet another perspective on him.
You could use a lip lock or two.
Abra held up her hands.
Fasting,
Yeah, yeah. I'm just saying, should the opportunity arise, he's got great lips. See you tomorrow.
Abra watched from the door while her friend hustled through the thick snow, and until she saw the back door light on the house next door shut off. She'd build a fire, she decided, have a little soup, and give Eli Landon some serious thought. 3. Maybe he'd lost some progress overall, Eli admitted, but he'd stuck with the book for the best part of the day, and he'd produced there. If he could keep his brain fired up, he'd write from the time he woke until the time he crashed. And, okay, maybe that wasn't healthy, but it would be productive. Besides, the snow hadn't relented until mid-afternoon. His vow to get out of the house at least once every day had to bow to 2 feet of snow and counting. At one point, when he simply couldn't think clearly enough to put coherent words on the page, he continued his exploration of the house. Tidy guest rooms, pristine baths, and, to his surprise and puzzlement, the former upstairs parlor, North Wing, now held a cross-trainer, free weights, a massive flat screen. He wandered the room, frowning at the yoga mats neatly rolled on a shelf, the towels tightly stacked, the large case of DVDs. He opened that, flipped through the pages. Power yoga? His grandmother? Seriously? Tai Chi? Pilates? Getting ripped? Gran? He tried to imagine it. He had to believe he owned a damn good imagination, or he'd never make a decent living writing novels. But when he tried to picture his watercoloring, pencil-sketching, garden-clubbing grandmother pumping iron, it failed him. Yet, Hester Landon never did anything without a reason. He couldn't deny the setup and layout of the room showed careful thought and good research. Maybe she decided she needed a convenient place to exercise when, like today, the weather prohibited her famous 3-mile daily walks. She could have hired someone to outfit the room. No, she never did anything without a reason, and she never did anything halfway. And still, he couldn't imagine her sliding in a DVD with the goal of getting ripped. Idly, he flipped through a couple more DVDs in the case, and found the sticky note.
Eli, regular exercise benefits body, mind, and spirit. Now, less brooding and more sweating. I love you. Gran via Abra Walsh.
Jesus. He couldn't decide whether to be amused or embarrassed. Just how much had his grandmother told Abra anyway? How about a little privacy? He shoved his hands in his pockets and walked to the window facing the beach. While the sea had calmed, it remained gray under a sky the color of a faded bruise. Waves flopped up against the snow-covered beach, slowly, gradually nibbling away at that rippled blanket of white. The white mounds of dunes rose. Seagrasses poked out like needles in a pincushion. They trembled in the wind, bent to the force of its hands. Snow buried the beach steps, lay thick and heavy on the rails. He saw not a single footprint, yet the world outside wasn't empty. Far out in that gray forever, he saw something leap, just a blur of shape and movement, here, then gone, and he watched gulls wing over the snow, over the sea. In the snow-muffled quiet, he heard them laughing, and thought of Abra. He glanced back, gave the cross-trainer an unenthusiastic study. He never liked putting in miles on a machine. If he wanted to work up a sweat, he'd play some round ball.
Don't have a ball, a hoop, he said to the empty house.
And I do have a couple feet of snow. I should shovel the walk, maybe. Why? I'm not going anywhere. And that last statement, he thought, had been part of the problem for nearly a year. Okay, fine, but I'm not doing any freaking power yoga. God, who thinks of that stuff? Maybe 10 or 15 on that damn machine. A couple of miles. He put in some miles on the jogging path along the Charles, usually working it in a couple times a week in decent weather. He considered a treadmill at his gym a last resort, but he'd put in plenty of time there, too. He could certainly handle his grandmother's little cross-trainer. Then he could email her, tell her he'd found the note, done the deed. And if she wanted to communicate with him on something, just communicate. No need to bring her yoga buddy into every damn thing. He approached the cross-trainer with inherent dislike, glanced at the flat screen. No, no TV, he decided. He'd stopped watching when he'd seen his own face on the screen too often, heard the commentary, the debates on his guilt or innocence, the truly horrible rundowns of his personal life, factual and not. Next time, if there was one, he thought as he stepped on, he'd dig out his iPod, but for now he'd just get it done and stay inside his own head. To get a feel for it, he gripped the handles, pushed with his feet, and his grandmother's name flashed on the display screen. Huh. Curious, he studied the pad, called up her stats. Whoa. Go grand. According to her last entry, which he realized was the day she'd taken the fall, she'd logged 3 miles in 48 minutes, 32 seconds. Not bad, but I can whip you. Intrigued now, he programmed for a second user, keyed in his name. He started slowly, giving himself a chance to warm up, then pushed it. 14 minutes and 1.2 miles later, drenched with sweat, his lungs burning, he surrendered. Gasping for breath, he staggered to the mini-fridge, grabbed a bottle of water. After guzzling, he dropped to the floor, lay flat on his back.
Jesus Christ. Jesus. I can't even keep up with an old lady. Pitiful. Pathetic.
He stared up at the ceiling, struggling to get his breath back, disgusted to feel the muscles in his legs actually quivering with shock and fatigue. He'd played basketball for goddamn Harvard. At 6'3", he'd made up for his relative disadvantage in height with speed and agility and endurance. He'd been a fucking athlete once, and now he was weak and soft, underweight and slow. He wanted his life back. No, that wasn't accurate. Even before the nightmare of Lindsay's murder, his life had been impossibly flawed, deeply unsatisfying. He wanted himself back, and damned if he knew how to do it. Where had he gone? He couldn't remember what it felt like to be happy, but he knew he had been. He'd had friends, interests, ambitions. He'd had fucking passion. He couldn't even find his anger, he thought. He couldn't even dig down and find his anger over what had been taken from him, over what he'd somehow surrendered. He'd taken the antidepressants. He'd talked to the shrink. He didn't want to go back there. He couldn't. And he couldn't just lie there on the floor in a sweaty heap. He had to do something, however incidental, however ordinary. Just do the next thing, he told himself. He pushed to his feet, limped his way to the shower. Ignoring the voice in his head that urged him to just lie down, sleep off the rest of the day, he dressed for the cold, layering sweatshirt over insulated shirt, getting a ski cap, gloves. Maybe he wasn't going anywhere, but that didn't mean the walkways, the driveway, even the terraces shouldn't be cleared. He'd promised to tend to Bluff House, so he'd tend to Bluff House. It took hours with snow blower, snow shovel. He lost count of the times he had to stop, to rest when his pulse beat pounded alarm bells in his head, or his arms shook like palsy. But he cleared the driveway, the front walk, then a decent path across the main terrace to the beach steps. And thanked God when the light faded to dusk, and made continuing with the other terraces impractical. Inside, he dumped his outdoor gear in the mudroom, walked like a zombie into the kitchen, where he slapped some lunch meat and Swiss cheese between two slices of bread and called it dinner. He washed it down with a beer, simply because it was there, eating and drinking while he stood over the sink and looked out the window. He'd done something, he told himself. He'd gotten out of bed. Always the first hurdle. He'd written. He'd humiliated himself on the cross-trainer. And he'd tended to Bluff House. All in all, a pretty decent day. He popped 4 Motrin, then dragged his aching body upstairs. He stripped, crawled into bed, and slept until dawn, dreamlessly. It surprised and pleased Abra to find the driveway cleared at Bluff House. She'd fully expected to slog through 2 feet of untrampled snow. Normally, she'd have walked from her cottage, but opted against navigating deep snow or thin ice on foot. She pulled her Chevy Volt behind Eli's BMW, grabbed her bag. She unlocked the front door, cocked her head to listen. When silence greeted her, she decided Eli was either still in bed or closed up somewhere in the house. She hung her coat in the closet, changed her boots for work shoes. She started a fire in the living room first, to cheer the room, then headed to the kitchen to make coffee. No dishes in the sink, she noted, and opened the dishwasher. She could track his meals since he'd arrived. The breakfast she'd made him, a couple of soup bowls, 2 small plates, 2 glasses, 2 coffee mugs. She shook her head. This wouldn't do. To corroborate, she checked cupboards, the refrigerator. No, this wouldn't do at all. She turned the kitchen iPod on low, then gathered ingredients. Once she'd made up a bowl of pancake batter, she went upstairs to find him. If he was still in bed, it was time he got up. But she heard the clicking of a keyboard from Hester's home office. Smiled. Well, that was something anyway. Moving quietly, she peeked through the open doorway to see him sitting at the wonderful old desk, an open bottle of Mountain Dew, mental note to pick up more for him, beside the keyboard. She'd give him a little more time there, she decided, and went straight into his bedroom. She made the bed, pulled the laundry bag out of the hamper, added bath towels. She checked other baths on the way back in case he'd used hand towels or washcloths, checked the gym. Back downstairs, she carted the bag into the laundry room, sorted, separated, and started a load, and shook out, hung up his outdoor gear. Not a lot to tidy, she realized, and she'd given the house a thorough cleaning the day before he'd arrived. While she could always find something to do, she calculated the time. She'd make him a kind of brunch before she rolled up her sleeves and really got to work. The next time she went upstairs, she deliberately made noise. When she reached the office, he was up and moving to the door, probably with the intention of closing it, she thought, so she stepped in before he could.
Good morning. It's a gorgeous day. Fabulous blue skies.
With her trash bag in hand, she walked over to empty the basket under the desk.
Blue sea, sun sparkling off the snow, the gulls are fishing. I saw a whale this morning.
A whale?
Just luck. I happened to be looking out the window just as it sounded. Way out and still spectacular. So,
she turned.
Your brunch is ready.
My what?
Brunch. It's too late for breakfast, which you didn't eat.
I had coffee.
Now you can have food.
Actually, he gestured to his laptop.
And it's annoying to be interrupted, to be hauled off to eat, but you'll probably work better after some food. How long have you been writing today?
I don't know. It was annoying, he thought. The interruption, the questions, the food he didn't want to take time for. Since about 6, I guess.
Well, God, it's 11! So definitely time for a break. I set you up in the morning room this time. The view's so nice from there, especially today. Do you want me to do any cleaning in here while you eat? Or ever?
No. After another slight pause. No.
I got that. Go ahead and eat, and I'll do what I have to do on this level. That way, if you want to go back to work, I'll be downstairs where I won't bother you.
She stood between him and his laptop, smiling genially in a faded purple sweatshirt with a peace sign dead center, even more faded jeans, and bright orange Crocs. As arguing seemed time-consuming and futile, he simply walked out of the room. He'd meant to stop and have something, maybe a bagel, whatever. He'd lost track of time. He liked losing track of time because it meant he was inside the book. She was supposed to clean the house, not take on the position as his damn keeper. He hadn't forgotten she was coming, but his plan to stop writing when she arrived, to grab that bagel and take it with him on a walk, to call home while he was out, well, the book sucked that away. He turned left into the glass-walled curve of the morning room. Abra was right. The view was worth it. He'd take that walk later, if he could find a reasonable route with the snow. At least he could get to the beach steps, take some pictures with his phone, send them home. He sat at the table with its covered plate, its short pot of coffee, crystal glass of juice. She'd even taken one of the flowers from the living room arrangement and tucked it in a bud vase. It reminded him of the way his mother had put a flower or some game or book or toy on the tray when she brought food to his sick bed when he was a boy. He wasn't sick. He didn't need to be mothered. All he needed was someone to come in and clean so he could write, live, shovel damn snow if it needed shoveling. He sat, wincing a little at the stiffness in his neck, his shoulders. Okay, the shovel snow for Pride Marathon had cost him, he admitted. He lifted the dome. A puff of fragrant steam rose from a stack of blueberry pancakes. A rasher of crisp bacon lined the edge of the plate, and a little clear bowl of melon, garnished with sprigs of mint, sat beside it. Wow. He simply stared a moment, struggling between more annoyance and acceptance. He decided both worked. He'd eat because it was here, and now he was damn near starving, and he could be annoyed about it. He spread some of the butter she'd scooped into a little dish over the stack, watched it melt as he added syrup. It felt a little Lord of the Manor, but really tasty. He knew very well he'd been raised in privilege, but pretty brunches with the morning paper folded on the table hadn't been everyday events. The Landons were privileged because they worked, and worked because they were privileged. As he ate, he started to open the paper, then just set it aside. Like television, newspapers held too many bad memories. The view contented him, and letting his mind just drift, he watched the water and the drip of melting snow as the sun bore down. He felt almost peaceful. He looked over when she came in.
Second floor's clear,
she told him and started to lift the tray.
I'll get it. No, he insisted. I'll get it. Look, you don't have to cook for me. It was great, thanks, but you don't have to cook.
I like to cook, and it's not all that satisfying to cook just for myself.
She followed him into the kitchen, then continued on to the laundry room.
And you're not eating properly.
I'm eating, he mumbled it.
A can of soup? A sandwich? A bowl of cold cereal?
She carried in a laundry basket, sat in the breakfast nook to fold.
You don't have secrets from the housekeeper,
she said easily.
Not about eating, showering, and sex. You need to put on about 15 pounds, I'd say. 20 wouldn't hurt you.
No, he hadn't been able to find his anger for months, but she was drawing him a map.
Listen,
you can tell me it's none of my business, she said, but that won't stop me, so I'll cook when I have time. I'm here anyway.
He couldn't think of a reasonable way to argue with a woman who was currently folding his boxers.
Can you cook?
She asked him. Yeah, enough.
Let's see.
She cocked her head, swept that green-eyed gaze over him.
Grilled cheese sandwiches, scrambled eggs, steak on the grill, burgers too, and something with lobster or clams.
He called it clams a la Eli, and really wished she'd get out of his head.
Do you mind read as well as make pancakes? I read palms and tarot, but mostly for fun.
It didn't surprise him, he realized. Not in the least.
Anyway, I'll make up a casserole or two, something you can just heat and eat. I'll be going to the market before I come back. I marked my days on the calendar there, so you'll have a schedule. You want me to pick up anything for you, besides more Mountain Dew?
Her brisk, matter-of-fact details clogged up his brain. I can't think of anything.
If you do, just write it down. What's your book about, or is that a secret?
It's, a disbarred lawyer looking for answers and redemption. Is he going to lose his life, literally, or get it back? That kind of thing.
Do you like him?
He stared at her a moment because it was exactly the right question, and the kind he wanted to answer rather than brush off or avoid. I understand him, and I'm invested in him. He's evolving into someone I like.
Understanding him is more important than liking him, I think.
She frowned as Eli rubbed at his shoulder, the back of his neck.
You hunch.
I'm sorry?
Over the keyboard. You hunch. Most people do.
She set the laundry aside, and before he realized what she meant to do, she'd stepped up to dig her fingers into his shoulder. Pain, sudden and sweet, radiated straight down to the soles of his feet. Look,
ow! Good God, Eli, you've got rocks in there!
Annoyance edged to a kind of baffled frustration. Why wouldn't the woman leave him alone?
I just overdid it yesterday. Ah, clearing the snow.
She lowered her hands as he stepped back, opened the cupboard for the Motrin. Partly overdoing, she thought. Partly keyboard hunch. But under all that, deep, complex, and system-wide stress.
I'm gonna get out for a while, make some phone calls. Good. It's cold, but it's beautiful.
I don't know what to pay you. I never asked. When she named a price, he reached for his wallet, found his pocket empty.
I don't know where I left my wallet. In your jeans. Now it's on your dresser.
Okay, thanks. I'll be right back.
Poor, sad, stressed Eli, she thought. She had to help him.
She thought of Hester, shaking her head as she loaded the dishwasher.
You knew I would,
she murmured. Eli came back, set the money on the counter.
And thanks if I don't get back before you leave. You're welcome.
I'm just gonna see what the beach is like and call my parents, my grandmother, and get the hell away from you, he thought.
Good. Give them all my best.
He stopped at the door to the laundry room. You know my parents?
Sure. I've met them several times when they've come here, and I saw them when I came to Boston to visit Hester.
I didn't realize you came into Boston to see her.
Of course I did. We just missed each other, you and I.
She started the machine and turned.
She's your grandmother, Eli, but she's been one to me, too. I love her. You should take a picture of the house from down at the beach and send it to her. She'd like that.
Yeah, she would.
Oh, Eli!
She said as he turned to the laundry room, and she walked over to pick up the laundry basket.
I'll be back about 5:30. My schedule's clear tonight.
Back?
Yeah, with my table. You need a massage.
I don't want need, she repeated.
You may not think you want one, but trust me, you will after I get started. This one's on the house. A welcome back gift. Therapeutic massage, Eli,
she added.
I'm licensed. No happy endings.
Well, Jesus. She only laughed as she sailed out.
Just so we understand each other. 5:30!
He started to go after her, make it clear he didn't want the service. And at the jerk away from the door, dull pain shot across the back of his shoulders.
Oh, shit. Oh, shit.
He had to ease his arms into his coat. He just needed the Motrin to kick in, he told himself, and to get back inside his own head without her in it, so he could think about the book. He'd walk somewhere, call, breathe, and when this nagging stiffness, this endless aching played out, He'd just text her. Better to text and tell her not to come. But first he'd take her advice, go down to the beach, take a picture of Bluff House. And maybe he'd wheedle some information out of his grandmother about Abra Walsh. He was still a lawyer. He ought to be able to finesse some answers out of a witness already biased in his favor. As he followed the path he'd cut down through the patio, he glanced back and saw Abra in his bedroom window. She waved. He lifted his hand, turned away again. She had the kind of fascinating face that made a man want to look twice. So he very deliberately kept his gaze straight ahead. 4. He enjoyed the walk on the snowy beach more than he'd anticipated. The winter white sun blasted down, bounced off the sea, the snow, sent them both sparkling. Others had walked before him, so he followed the paths they'd cut down to the wet and chilly strip of sand the sweep of waves had uncovered. Shorebirds landed on the verge to strut or scurry, leaving their shallow stamps imprinted before water foamed over and erased them. They called, cried, chattered, made him remember the advance of spring, despite the winterscape around him. He followed a trio of what he thought might be some sort of tern, stopped, took a couple more pictures and sent them home. Walking on, he checked the time, calculated the schedule back in Boston before he tried his parents' house line.
"And what are you up to?"
"Gran." He hadn't expected her to answer. "I'm taking a walk on Whiskey Beach. We've got a couple feet of snow. Looks a lot like it did that Christmas back when I was, I don't know, about 12?
"You and your cousins and the Grady boys built a snow castle on the beach, and you took my good red cashmere scarf and used it as a flag."
"I forgot that part, the flag part."
"I didn't."
"How are you?"
"Coming along. Annoyed with people who won't let me take 2 steps without that damn walker. I'll do fine with a cane."
As he'd had an email from his mother detailing the battle of the walker, he'd come prepared. "It's smarter to be careful and not risk another fall. You've always been smart."
"That roundabout won't work with me, Eli Andrew Landon."
"You haven't always been smart?" He made her laugh, considered it a small victory.
"I have, and intend to continue. My brain's working just fine, thank you, even if it can't pull out how I fell in the first place. I don't even remember getting out of bed. But no matter, I'm healing, and I will be done with this old lady invalid walker. What about you?"
"I'm doing okay. Writing every day, making what seems like real progress on the book. I feel good about that, and it's good to be here. Gran, I want to thank you again for—"
"Don't."
Her voice held the hard edge of New England granite.
"Bluff House is as much yours as mine. It's family. You know there's firewood in the shed, but if you need more, you talk to Digby Pierce. His number's in my book, in the desk in the little office, and in the far right drawer in the kitchen. Abra has it if you can't find it."
"Okay, no problem."
"Are you eating properly, Eli? I don't want to see skin and bones the next time I lay eyes on you."
"I just had pancakes."
"Ah, did you go into Cafe Beach in the village?"
"No, actually, Abra made them. Listen, about that—"
"She's a good girl."
Hester rolled right over him.
"A fine cook, too. If you have any questions or run into any problems, you just ask her. If she doesn't have the answer, she'll find it. She's a smart girl, and a very pretty one, as I hope you noticed, unless you've gone blind as well as skinny."
He felt a warning tingle at the back of his neck. "Gran, you're not trying to fix me up with her, are you?"
"Why would I have to do something like that? Can't you think for yourself? When have I ever interfered in your love life, Eli?
Okay, you're right. I apologize. It's just, you know her a lot better than I do. I want her to feel obliged to cook for me, and I don't seem to be able to get that across to her.
Did you eat the pancakes?
Yes, but...
Because you felt obliged to?
Point taken.
Over and above that, Abra does what she likes, I can promise you. That's something I admire about her. She enjoys life and lives it. You could use a bit of that.
That warning tingle resounded. But you're not trying to fix me up.
I trust you to know your own mind, heart, and physical needs.
Okay, let's move on from there, or move laterally from there. I don't want to offend your friend, especially when she's doing my laundry. So, as I said, you know her best. How do I diplomatically convince her I don't want or need a massage?
She... offered you a massage.
Yes, ma'am. Or she informed me that she'd be back at 5:30 with her table. My no thanks didn't make a dent.
You're in for a treat. That girl has magic hands. Before she started giving me weekly massages and talking me into doing yoga, I lived with lower back pain and an ache right between my shoulder blades. Old age, I decided, and accepted, until Abra.
He realized he'd walked farther than he intended when he spotted the steps leading up to the village. The few seconds it took him to shift direction, decide to go up, gave Hester an opening.
You're a bundle of stress, boy. Do you think I can't hear it in your voice? Your life went to hell in a handbasket. And that's not right. It's not fair. Life too often isn't either. So it's what we do about it. What you've got to do now is the same as everybody's telling me I have to do. Get healthy, get strong, get back on your feet. I don't like hearing it either, but that doesn't mean it's not the simple truth.
And a massage from your pancake-making neighbor's the answer?
It's one of them. Listen to you, huffing and puffing like an old man.
Insulted, mortified, he pivoted to the defensive. I walked all the way to the village, and some of that through this damn snow, and I'm climbing steps.
And these excuses from a former Harvard basketball star,
I wasn't a star, he muttered.
You were to me. You are to me.
He paused at the top of the steps.
Yeah, to catch his breath,
and to wait for the heart she'd managed to stir to settle.
Did you see my new gym?
She asked him.
I did. Very nice. How much can you bench press, Hester?
She laughed.
Ha-ha! You think you're smart and sassy. I'm not going out scrawny and used up, I'll tell you that. You make use of that gym, Eli.
I did, once already. I got your memo. I'm standing across from the lobster shack.
The best lobster rolls on the North Shore.
Well, things haven't changed much.
Here and there, but the foundation's what counts. I expect you to remember yours. You're a Landon, and you've got the grit of hawk and blood that comes down through me. Nobody holds us down, not for long. You take care of Bluff House for me.
I will.
And remember, sometimes a pancake is just a pancake.
She made him laugh. The sound might have been rusty, but it was there. Okay, Gran. Use the walker.
I'll use the damn walker for now, if you get that massage.
All right. Check your email for some pictures. I'll call you in a couple days. He passed places he remembered, cones and scoops, Maria's Pizza, and new enterprises like Surf's Up with its beach pink clapboard, the white spire of the Methodist Church, the simple box of the Unitarian, the dignified edifice of the North Shore Hotel, and the charm of the scattering of B&Bs that would welcome tourists through the season. Light traffic chugged by, then petered out almost completely as he made his way home. Maybe he'd go back to the village on the next clear afternoon, pick up some postcards, write quick notes to make his parents and the couple of friends he could still claim smile. It couldn't hurt. And it couldn't hurt to check out some of the shops, old and new, get a feel for the place again, remembering his foundation, so to speak. But right now he was tired and cold and wanted home. His car sat alone in the driveway, and that was a relief. He'd stalled long enough for Abra to finish. He wouldn't have to make conversation or avoid it. Considering the state of his boots, he circled around, let himself in through the laundry room mudroom. His shoulder felt fine now, he decided as he took off his gear. Or close enough. He could text Abra, tell her the walk had worked out the kinks. Except for that deal he'd made with his grandmother. So he'd keep the deal, but he could put it off for a few days. He had a couple hours to work that out, he thought. He was a lawyer, for Christ's sake, practicing or not, and a writer. He could compose a clear and reasonable communication. He stepped out into the kitchen, spotted the sticky note on the counter.
Chicken and potato casserole in the freezer. Fireboxes restocked. Eat an apple, and don't forget to hydrate after your walk. See you at 5:30-ish.
Abra.
What are you, my mother? Maybe I don't want an apple.
And the only reason he got water out of the fridge was that he was thirsty. He didn't want or need somebody telling him when to eat, when to drink. The next thing she'd tell him to remember to floss or wash behind his ears. He'd go up, dig into some research, then compose that text. He started out, cursed, circled back and grabbed an apple out of the bamboo bowl because, damn it, now he wanted one. He knew his irritation was irrational. She was being kind, considerate. But at the base of it, he just wanted to be left alone. He wanted space and time to find his footing again, not a helping hand. There'd been plenty of those hands at the outset, then fewer and fewer as friends, colleagues, neighbors had started to distance themselves from a man suspected of killing his wife, of smashing in her skull because she'd cheated on him, or because a divorce would cost him a great deal of money, or a combination thereof. He didn't intend to reach out for those hands again. In his stocking feet, still a bit chilled from the long walk, he detoured to the bedroom for shoes. He stopped, the apple halfway to his mouth, and frowned at the bed. Moving closer, he peered down and choked out his second laugh of the day, a definite record. She'd folded, twisted, curved a hand towel into what looked like some strange bird squatting on the duvet. It wore sunglasses with a little flower tucked between the cloth and the earpiece. Silly, he thought. And sweet. He sat on the edge of the bed, nodded at the bird. I guess I'm getting a massage. He left the bird where it was, went into the office. He'd do some research, maybe fiddle around with the next scene. Just get that springboard. But out of habit, he checked his email first. Among the spam, a post from his father, another from his grandmother in response to the photos he'd sent her, he found one from his lawyer. Rather not, he thought. Rather not click on it. But then it would just be there, waiting, waiting. With the muscles in his shoulders twisting into fists, he opened the email. He cut through the legalese, set aside the assurances, even the questions of approach, and focused on the ugly center. Lindsay's parents were once again making noises about filing a wrongful death suit against him. It was never going to end, he thought. never going to be over. Unless and until the police caught whoever was responsible for Lindsay's death, he was the default. Lindsay's parents despised him, absolutely and without a sliver of doubt believed he murdered their only child. If they went forward with this, and the longer he remained the default, the more likely they'd do just that. Everything would be dredged up again, swirled into the media hotbox to cook and bloat, and spill over not only him, but his family. Again. Assurances the case was unlikely to go forward now, or to gain much traction if and when, didn't help. They would beat that drum for sure, righteous in their certainty that they sought the only justice available to them. He thought of the publicity, all those talking heads discussing, analyzing, speculating. The private investigators the Piedmonts would hire, likely already had, who would come here to Whiskey Beach and bring that speculation, that doubt, those questions with them to the only place he had left. He wondered if Boston PD's Detective Wolf had any part in their decision. On bad days, Eli considered Wolf his personal Javert, doggedly, obsessively pursuing him for a crime he didn't commit. On better ones, he thought of Wolf as stubborn and wrong-headed, a cop who refused to consider that the lack of evidence might equal innocence. Wolf hadn't been able to put a case together that convinced the prosecutor to file. But that hadn't stopped the man from trying, from edging over the line of harassment until his superiors had warned him off, at least officially. No, he wouldn't put it past Wolf to encourage and abet the Piedmonts in their quest. Braced on his elbows, Eli rubbed his hands over his face. He'd known this was coming. He'd known this other shoe would drop. So maybe, in a horrible way, it was better to get it done. Agreeing with the last line of Neil's email, "We need to talk," Eli picked up the phone. The headache was a tantrum inside his skull, kicking, punching, screaming. Reassurances from his lawyer did little to alleviate it. The Piedmonts made noises about a suit to increase pressure, to keep the media interested, to float the idea of a settlement. None of those opinions, even though he agreed with them, reassured. The suggestions to keep a low profile, not to discuss the investigation, to re-engage his own private investigator, hardly helped. He already intended to keep a low profile. Any lower, he'd be interred. Who the hell would he discuss anything with? And the idea of pumping money and hope into private investigation, which hadn't turned up anything genuinely helpful the first time around, just added a layer of depression. He knew. As his lawyer knew, as the police knew, that the more time that passed, the less likely they'd find solid evidence. The most likely endgame? He'd remain in limbo, not charged, not cleared, and shadowed by suspicion for the rest of his life. So, he had to learn to live with it. He had to learn to live. He heard the knock at the door, but didn't fully register the sound, the reason, until the door opened. He watched Abra muscling in a huge padded case, a bulging tote.
Hi. Don't mind me. You just stand there while I drag all this in by myself. No, no problem at all.
She'd nearly managed it by the time he crossed over. I'm sorry. I meant to get in touch to tell you this just isn't a good time. She leaned back against the door to close it, let out an audible,
phew. Too late.
She began, then her easy smile faded when she focused on his face.
What's wrong? What happened?
Nothing. Not much more than usual, he thought. This just isn't a good time.
Do you have another appointment? Are you going out dancing? You have a naked woman upstairs waiting for hot sex?
No, she answered before he could.
Then it's as good a time as any.
Depression spun into annoyance on a finger snap. How about this? No means no. Now she blew out a breath.
That's an excellent argument. And I know I'm being pushy, even obnoxious. Chalk it up to keeping my promise to Hester to help, and the fact that I can't stand seeing anyone, anything in pain. Let's make a deal.
And damn it, that reminded him of his earlier one with his grandmother. What are the terms?
Give me 15 minutes. If after 15 minutes on the table you don't feel better, I'll pack it up, get out, and never bring up the subject again.
10 minutes.
10,
she agreed.
Where do you want me to set up? There's plenty of room up in your bedroom.
Here's fine. Stuck, he gestured toward the main parlor. He could push her out of the house faster from there.
All right. Why don't you start a fire while I set up? I'd like the room warm.
He'd intended to light a fire. He'd gotten distracted, lost track of time. He could start a fire, give her 10 minutes, in exchange for her leaving him the hell alone. But it still pissed him off. He hunkered down by the hearth to stack kindling. Aren't you worried about being here? He demanded. Alone with me? Abra unzipped the cover on her portable table.
Why would I be?
A lot of people think I killed my wife.
A lot of people think global warming is a hoax. I don't happen to agree.
You don't know me. You don't know what I might do under any given set of circumstances. She set up her table, folded away the cover, movements precise and practiced, and unhurried.
I don't know what you do under any given set of circumstances, but I know you didn't kill your wife.
The calm, conversational tone of her voice infuriated him.
Why? Because my grandmother doesn't think I'm a murderer?
That would be one reason.
She smoothed a fleece cover on the table, covered it with a sheet.
Hester's a smart, self-aware woman, and one who cares about me. If she had even the smallest doubt, she would have told me to stay away from you. But that's just one reason. I've several others.
As she spoke, she set a few candles around the room, lit them.
I work for your grandmother and have a personal friendship with her. I live in Whiskey Beach, which is Landon territory, so I followed the story.
The lurking black cloud of depression rolled back in. I'm sure everybody did around here.
That's natural and human. Just as disliking and resenting the fact that people are talking about you, reaching conclusions about you, is natural and human. I reached my own conclusion. I saw you on TV, in the paper, on the internet. And what I saw was shock, sadness, not guilt. What I see now? Stress, anger, frustration, not guilt.
As she spoke, she took a band from around her wrist and with a few flicks secured her hair in a tail.
I don't think the guilty lose much sleep.
One other, though, as I said, I have several.
You're not stupid. Why would you kill her the same day you argued with her in public? The same day you learned you had a lever to dump some dirt on her in the divorce.
First degree wasn't on the table. I was pissed. Crime of passion.
Well, that's bullshit,
she said as she retrieved her massage oil.
You were so passionate you went into your own house and prepared to take 3 items, arguably your property. The case against you didn't stand, Eli, because it was and is weak. They proved the time you entered because you switched off the house alarm and had the time of your 911 call and because people know the time you left your office that evening. So you were in the house for less than 20 minutes, but in that small window of time, you went upstairs, into the safe, taking only your great-grandmother's ring, came down, took the painting you'd bought off the wall, wrapped it in bathroom towels, killed your wife in a fit of passion, then called the police, all in under 20 minutes.
The police reconstruction proved it was possible.
But not probable,
she countered.
Now we can stand here debating the case against you, or you can just take my word that I'm not worried you're going to kill me because you don't like hospital corners on your bed or the way I fold your socks.
Well, things aren't as simple as you make them.
Things are rarely as simple or as complicated as anyone makes them. I'm going to use the powder room to wash up. Go ahead and undress. Get on the table. I'll start you face up.
In the powder room, Abra shut her eyes, did a full minute of yoga breathing. She understood perfectly well he'd lashed out at her to push her out, scare her off. But all he'd done was annoy her. In order to expel stress, dark thoughts, frustrations with massage, she couldn't hold on to any of her own. She continued to clear her mind as she washed her hands. When she stepped back in, she saw him on the table, under the top sheet, and bored stiff. Didn't he understand